Coming December 12th, two short tracks from a whole new universe.
Transfer complete.
Hello and welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between that Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the animated bridge...
This is Tyler Orton battling Space Lincoln to save my babies.
And this week, we're here to talk about the two new animated short treks, Ephraim and Dot and The Girl Who Made the Stars.
Yeah, why don't we kick it off with episode 5 here, Ephraim and Dots. Maybe a little bit more for us to dig into, but I think there's some interesting things that they do bring up in The Girl Who Made the Stars that we'll kick it off with. But Cam, I think within maybe the first shot of this, like, we are kind of sucked in, if I can speak for you at this point, you know.
I mean, I am a big fan of 2D animation, and just the 2D animation style will draw me in more so than kind of the, you know... like template CG animation that we see so commonly. And again, it was just really beautiful seeing the tardigrade character just flying around in space.
I'm talking salt vampire here.
Of course. But that was when I knew I was in for something cool.
Yeah, but look, I think if you're doing kind of an animated thing that is very much, say, story-based, plot-based, make it a character journey here. Mm-hmm. And Ephraim and Dot follows a tardigrade that is, of course, like... on a journey to deposit her eggs and then save them and nurture for them. And it takes her on an adventure across the galaxy, across time, following our crew from the USS Enterprise 1701, the original. We get cameos from a lot of great characters, just depicting some of the most classic moments in all of Star Trek, all the way through to the movies, you know.
Yeah.
I am loving this. How do they get away with this just from a legal perspective? Kind of consider that this does go into the movie universe, which at the time, this was before the merger of Viacom and CBS. This goes into the movie universe, which was under the domain of Paramount. So I'm a little confused about that, but
is it a little bit because it is a comedic sort of spin on it that you could fall under like parody?
Fair use or something?
Fair use and parody, maybe?
Who knows? Who cares? Like, this was entertainment. And the key for me when I'm watching something like this, it's like, okay, this is clearly meant for children, right? Mm-hmm. We went and saw Toy Story 4 over the summer.
Yeah.
Great film.
Like, I loved it.
You know, that's the key. You can make it enjoyable for everybody and everyone's going to walk away happy. But here, I know the motivation of the tardigrade the entire time. Mm-hmm. I find this person going on an arc and the robot, I'm assuming Ephraim was the tardigrade and then Dot was the robot.
That would make sense to me.
Yeah. So
Dot seems like a, you know, robot name to me more so than Ephraim.
Yeah. And but like even the robot here whose job is to keep the tardigrade out of the ship, the robot has a journey by saving the eggs by the end of it, you know. This to me is just like just such wonderful kind of story that they're telling here.
And I mean, I guess this establishes now that the Kirk Enterprise had robots on it, that, I guess.
We just never got to see them
on
screen.
That's right.
I can buy. I'm sure there's a lot of people that are saying, well, that's a total retcon. Whatever.
But no, exactly. Like, the motivations of this are very clear. And I think it really needs to be underlined that Michael Giacchino, who directed this, has worked in the Pixar factory for a long time and does a lot of the music for a lot of their films. And I can't remember if he worked on WALL-E, but boy, does this have a lot of like reminiscences of WALL-E. Like, this felt like someone who learned at kind of the feet of how to do like fun sci-fi high concept sort of stuff like WALL-E.
If I may be so bold, I'm pretty sure, I'm like 80% sure that he did WALL-E.
Yeah.
So he also did the music for this, which this might be the best musical score we've gotten since Star Trek returned to the small screen. Like, I'm just in love with all these like old school musical cues.
Yeah.
And you really are telling a story with what's going on in the music. Like, I could almost have closed my eyes and I could have like just felt the emotion of everything that was going on as we depict, you know, the tardigrade just doing its best to maneuver through the ship. This is fantastic.
Well, and just, of course, like when it's going through time, you're getting all these amazing nods to the Tholian web and Doomsday Machine and all that sort of stuff. and the way the music's playing along with that. Like, it's very playful, very high energy, but it has artistry behind it. It's not kind of that generic track you just throw on some cheap animation just to be like, okay, here's the exciting part. Like, it felt like there's actual a vision behind it. And I mean, Michael Giacchino, again, he's definitely done his homework in this world, so he knows how to structure these sorts of things for maximum impact.
What do you think, like, maybe the time frame is that they had to work on this? This is done animation style, which is more time consuming than live action.
Yeah.
Giacchino's doing a score for this, but I mean, this guy's kind of a score machine if you look at his credits.
I don't even understand how he does so much in a year. Wow. It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, some guys, he's like kind of the Stephen King sort of, you know, just some people have that knack.
He loves dairy.
Yes.
The place, not the food item.
Dairy Maine is what you're talking about. Yeah. So, like, I'm thinking, like, this probably, but it's only 8 minutes. Mm-hmm. So, like, I don't know, I go back and forth, like, maybe they had, like, between the writing process to the time that it hit screen, we also knew that Short Treks began to premiere about a year ago.
Right.
I'm thinking they probably had, like, maybe a year from the time that it was commissioned to the time that we actually saw it, you know?
Yeah, because we had the announcement that Michael Giacchino was going to do on quite a while ago.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you could definitely tell when it came to the CG animation, it wasn't as polished as, you know, maybe we would hope, but it was fine. But you could tell that it didn't have the amount of time to work on it that, or the budget for that matter, to make it look as up to, you know, the Pixar brand or something like that.
I'm also thinking about, like, a fan reaction about, like, this is what, the fourth different iteration of Kirk and Company, if we think the original series, then we think the Kelvinverse, and then we think about the original animated series, and then we think about the Anson Mount, Ethan Peck versions as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, so this is number five then?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's just interesting how they keep it so iconic. I think the uniforms help. Like, how do you not recognize those uniforms?
Of course,
but it's just very interesting. Do you think, one, Bill Shatner is getting any royalties out of having his voice appear in this?
Nope, and I don't think old George Takei is either.
Yeah, we can ask them about that at the next convention.
Yeah.
So,
I loved it, though, just seeing, like, Space Seed and, like, Khan in the bed. You know, it was just so much fun to see these little nods. And, I think we just have to maybe accept the facts that as we get further and further into the future, TOS will be a show that will probably be watched less, just because it is a very old show and new fans are going to be less likely to go back and watch a 1966 TV show. But I think the iconography of that show and all the, you know, the impact it has with its images and creations are going to be carried forward through stories like this, where we're seeing the salt vampire and, you know, a lot of that TOS imagery, the giant green hand.
Something that you pointed out here, our logo, of course, the giant green hand.
Making us relevant all over again.
We were relevant?
I know.
Yeah. The thing that you mentioned just a second ago, though, is like how fun it was.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is what we've discovered more and more with like new era Star Trek, is the moments that we cling to most in Star Trek Discovery, the episodes that we like the most, it's when they're willing to have a little bit more fun than take the very, very serious track that we've seen.
Yeah.
The best short tracks, save for Calypso, I think have been the lighter short tracks. We loved Trouble with Edward. We loved The Escape Artist.
Yep.
And I think this might be like up there as top tier. Ephraim Adad is up there for top tier short treks that we've seen so far. Maybe you and I should do a ranking in a few weeks once we have the Picard short trek.
Yeah, that one's out, I think, January 9th. So we could do it, shortly in the new year. Yeah.
It's going to be interesting to kind of rank them because there is an interesting spectrum going on here.
And there wasn't really in the first group we had. You know, yes, they bounced around in kind of tone, but ultimately they felt kind of as a whole versus this latest group really does mix it up a lot, like where you have these animated ones and, you know, the next one is going to be Picard sort of themed. And how does that kind of feel?
Yeah, and we do say the word Picard only because we know that, as you say, it's Picard themed. We don't know if Patrick Stewart's actually going to appear in it.
Picard, but the series, well, not Picard the character.
Yeah, we anticipate it is going to tie in. Well, we've been told it's going to tie into Star Trek Picard somehow. We'll just find out. I suspect it's going to be Romulan-centric just because of the name of it, which is Sons of Mars. So any final thoughts on Ephraim Adad before we jump on over to The Girl Who Made the Stars?
I thought it was a blast.
Yeah.
I had a lot of hope for this one. And it's, you know, when as soon as Michael Giacchino signed up to do it, it's something where I really thought it had a lot of potential to work outside of the usual, you know, Kurtzman Star Trek factory, like to feel different and very much like a outside talent coming in and doing his own thing with a Star Trek story, which some of the short treks have done, to be fair. But at the time, I didn't necessarily know they would. This one felt like everything I hoped it would be, and something that I could totally see myself rewatching and rewatching just because of the fun references, the energy, and just, again, the very simple storytelling that was so effective.
I love this one here. Now, with The Girl Who Made the Stars, I think our response was a little bit more muted as we were watching it.
Yeah.
But it's not a bad thing. And I came around about halfway through when I just said to myself, Tyler, they are at the point where they're making animation for kids. The mm-hmm. whole point of this is to build new audiences, which I think is a very smart thing to do.
Yeah.
And this is essentially kind of less of the Toy Story 4, more of the, I don't know, Baby Geniuses sort of a realm.
Or
Baby Boss, is that what I'm thinking of?
Yeah, it's something like the Boss Baby.
Boss Baby, yeah.
A movie I never saw, to be fair. But
Baby Geniuses was a live action movie.
Yeah, where, Christopher Lloyd, wasn't he in that?
Something like that.
Yeah, many years ago. I think they even made a sequel. But enough about that horror show. But this is what I was referring to when I kind of said that template animation style too, though, where it's that CG look. You can, if you look at it, it has a little bit of that. You know, they are all kind of using the same programs nowadays, and that's something that's Into the Spider-Verse when that came out. They talked about how, you know, hey, guys, why does your movie look so different? They said, because we threw out the package and created our own software for animation, and that's why all these animated movies look the same. And this one had that kind of look. You can kind of see a little bit of the similar character modeling as, say, in Frozen.
Sure.
Frozen has a lot more money to throw at it, but you can see similar kind of look in the faces.
Yeah. And for this, I mean, we get a Michael Burnham as a girl story. Essentially, I think what we're following here is how she becomes inspired to be an explorer.
Yeah.
It's a perfectly nice story. My hang up though is, like, as we're watching like this folktale unfold, I also had to get my head around, like, oh, it's a character based kind of revelation. It's not really a Star Trek sort of adventure. It's more like something that's meant to inform what we know about Michael. And I can appreciate that. It just wasn't nearly as gripping to me as, say, Ephraim and Dot. That was maybe my big hang up over this one.
Yeah. Wasn't this like an adaptation or basically creating the story that Burnham told in the premiere of Star Trek Discovery Season 2?
From Brother. This is
the voiceover bit. Yeah.
Kicked off the season, exactly. So I think what it is maybe trying to explain why she even brought that up in the first place. Because I don't think by the end of the season they quite came full circle on what that was meant to be thematically for the remainder of the season. I think they meant to connect more thoroughly.
Yeah.
And it didn't at all. Like,
did she make the stars in that season, Tyler?
Well, that's just it. Because when we were doing the rewatch and I heard that little kind of soliloquy that she was giving to kick off the season, I was just like, okay, well, I'll keep my eyes open for how this really connects to the rest of the season. And it didn't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was essentially kind of what we saw in this Girl Who Made the Stars short track, and I was just like, okay, well, you know, obviously they probably commissioned them around the same time. We're like, okay, well, this is what we're going to do. And there's some nods to the season because, of course, we see her father wearing a Section 31 badge.
Right.
I still get a laugh out of how this Starfleet secret agency has their agents walking around in their homes wearing secret agent badges.
Yeah.
And remember in Context is for Kings?
Yeah.
Burnham sees of one of those black badges.
Yeah.
And she's like, what is that? What is that supposed to mean? I don't know. Why don't you ask your father? Because he walked around in the house with them all the time. Like,
how many movies have we seen where, for example, the husband or the father is a spy or works for the CIA or something and goes home and has to fake what his alternate life is? And it's like wrecking his marriage and all this. Like, you know, the family's falling apart because dad has so many secrets. Section 31, you're just like, no, that's what I do.
I still can't get over the fact that, like, Amanda of Vulcan knows what Section 31 is. I'm just like, okay, you guys are very out in the open for Black Ops. So there you go.
Do you think young Burnham knew what it was when her father's wearing the badge?
She must have just forgotten all about it. Like, I can't explain it otherwise.
Yeah.
It's like, Yeah, so I again, we got another tardigrade shout out here with her stuffed animal.
Discovery loves tardigrades.
Yeah, I never even knew what a tardigrade was before I started watching Star Trek Discovery. So yeah. I wonder if the broader conversation that we can have is this strategy of CBS reaching out to younger audiences, which I think both these short treks are evidence of here. We're going to get a children's animated series coming up. And I think if The Girl Who Made the Stars is any indication, you and I were wondering how we're going to be reviewing those series going forward.
Yeah.
And I think maybe this just reemphasizes to us that we'll stick to our original plan, which is like we'll do them in blocks. I don't think we're going to do week-to-week reviews of
maybe like the way we do The Mandalorian now.
But
not necessarily every week.
Yeah, that makes sense as well. Yeah. It's like we're not going to devote like an entire, hour-long episode to kind of children's programming,
which has generally a simple moral, for children. And does that really offer enough fodder for like a, hour-long discussion? For us, probably not.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you and I were struggling even with this 7-minute long short trip to stretch it out for like 10
sure.
minutes.
I'll say a couple interesting things though about this one that jumped out to me though. The kind of African mythology I think is really interesting to, again, show to children. That's something that's really great to have out there in a mainstream platform for everyone to see. It also actually reminded me a little bit, some of the mythology aspects of it with, the giant snake. It reminded me of the animated series episode. I can't remember the name of it. It's near the end of the series run, though, where it has like the Mayan gods. And it has a similar kind of look to it that I thought was cool. And not necessarily, your standard choice that you would, that a lot of studios would sit down and be like, okay, we want an animated short trek. What are you going to do? And then they gave them this, which I actually think is kind of interesting and, a little progressive.
Yeah, and how do you think kids would respond? I know it's a tough question because
I don't know.
It seems very much kind of like a learning module to a certain degree. Like, here's like the lesson, whereas like I wonder if kids nowadays are into more of the wacky hijinks that we saw in Ephraim and Dot. I think Ephraim and Dot would appeal much more to kids.
Well, the problem is, when I look at The Girl Who Made the Stars, it has a nice moral to it. There's some nice little action shots. One that reminded me a lot of the movie 300, the final one where she goes up against the snake creature.
That's hilarious.
And you have that one shot of kind of looking down on the back of a bird flying over the landscape that had to be a nod to The Lion King. It had to be, right? So, like, I do think there's some vibrant moments there that kids would perk up for. I really have zero understanding, not having children myself, what the what it's like out there for young kids watching all this animated programming on TV and which ones would jump out versus which wouldn't.
Yeah.
It's very tough for me to say.
Well, and another thing that I'm curious about, though, that being that helped the girl create the stars, I think we're meant to believe that it's an alien being. You know? So I wonder if that has implications for what we can expect in season 3. We are following a Michael Burnham story.
Yeah.
We know that, what did they say? This is it took place 1,000 centuries ago.
Mm-hmm.
Season 3 is going to take place about 1,000 years from now. I think whatever being that is depicted here, it may have a long life, or I just wonder if maybe they're hinting at something that could be coming down the pike, though.
Yeah, pike, huh?
I think you chuckle every single time I say coming down the pike. It's a very common
term. Oh, it totally is. But now it's, of course, Anson Mount is, since he's been on screen, that's all you think of when you hear the word pike.
I don't know. Not for me. I know.
I'm very simple.
No, I'm just fascinated. You chuckle every single time I use this very common term.
I know. Yeah. But this actual story, though, did remind me a little bit of the short trek, The Brightest Star, where you had Saru. And, they're people, and you have Saru's interaction with Georgiou at the end and her flying off into the stars. That definitely reminded, kind of popped into my head a bit watching the end of this short trek as well.
Yeah. Although this alien being, I don't for one instance believe that within Star Trek mythology, this alien being actually literally created all the stars that we see. I don't think planet Earth existed sans stars,
It's like one of the ancient aliens.
Yeah, well, the Chariots of the Gods.
Sure.
Yeah. I think CBS is on the right path trying to reach out to kids. I am curious, even just the premise of the children's show that we'll be debuting, is it in 2020 or is it going to be a little bit later than that? I forget. We know that Lower Decks, the adult-oriented cartoon series, is going to be in 2020, but...
It's often tough, too, because for a couple of reasons. Number one, animation has a slower, you know, time in terms of production than live action to get onto the air. But also, two, every show pretty much that the Kurtzman era has announced ended up being delayed anyway. So they could say 2020, but it may be 2021.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm still waiting on the Starfleet Academy update that we haven't had in about 2 years now. So, either way, regardless of when this hits, the premise for those that may not recall, though, it's essentially like what preteens find an abandoned starship and they're trying to live up to, you know, Starfleet ideals.
Yeah.
I think that's interesting. And I think it's smart for CBS trying to get younger audiences into this. We've had this discussion before. We go to the Star Trek conventions every year. There's not a lot of young people there.
Right. Other than us.
You make that remark. I think a lot of people think that you're joking. You and I, we're in our 30s. We are among the youngest people there.
Right.
You know? So it is interesting. And I think they need to... And it's great when we see kids there. It's like, you know, that their parents introduced them to this. So I hope that maybe corporate America can introduce this for consumer culture everywhere and give a boost. But it just means like guaranteeing the longevity of Star Trek for here on out. I don't think Star Trek would have gone away as long as it did in, you know, the 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
Had we had like animated series geared towards children who would have been getting older and buying more items or just pushing along, you know, the Star Trek franchise. So I think this is very smart on the part of CBS.
I mean, CBS has to know that they need to get young audiences into Star Trek because they're investing a lot into Star Trek going forward, a lot. It seems to be their primary thing they're focusing on. And so they need young audiences to support this thing if they want to have, you know, I mean, look, I don't think Star Trek's ever going to make them the money that Star Wars will make Disney, but you look at the audience for Star Wars, it's quite young, and it continues to go generation by generation drawing them in, and I think Star Trek needs to do the same thing. And, I mean, will the animation work for that? I mean, who knows, but it's definitely worth trying, and Star Wars has succeeded with animation drawing in a lot of kids, so...
Yeah, you bring up the Star Wars thing, and I'm curious about this and how... Maybe CBS, Viacom will be going forward with how they treat the crossovers between the movie and the TV franchises.
Mm-hmm.
With Star Wars, we have The Mandalorian airing right now. It's going to be airing up until the debut of The Rise of Skywalker. And I think they have one more episode that airs after that, if I recall correctly.
That's right, yeah.
Aren't they doing like two next week? I think they're going to have like two right before Rise of Skywalker.
Yeah, opens. I believe that's the case. Yeah.
And I wonder if there's like opportunities, and they may be hinting at this, but like there's going to be stuff that's going on in Mandalorian that resonates within Rise of Skywalker. I think CBS has to be waking up to the fact that if Viacom is taking everything under the same umbrella, the movie franchise and the TV franchise, I think this big corporate parent is going to be looking to get a lot more of this crossover stuff going on both TV to help promote the big screen stuff. And we even see that moving forward with what Marvel's going to be in the future too. Like, I mean, what would you like to see? More of the Short Trek sort of stuff or maybe hints dropped in like an ongoing TV series? What do you think makes most sense, Cam?
I would like to see more of these Short Treks just because they are a lot of fun, but they don't feel like an essential. Like if you miss them, it's not going to ruin the series. I get very nervous when it's like, oh, you have to have seen this series and you have to have seen these films to understand this thing. Like, I think that's where you get into trouble. And I've talked about that in the past. And I am very hopeful that with something like the Short Treks, they can have a lot of fun. They can add value to what you're watching, but they don't necessarily have to drive what you're like the franchise you're watching.
Yeah. I find that most franchises, even if they say that, I think it's more just a way to get you to keep watching other stuff.
It is true. Like, that is true.
I can buy that because, I don't know, did you miss anything with like the Netflix Marvel series? Like,
no.
Yeah.
And although those ones weren't as connected. I guess it was more Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. when it first started.
Yeah.
And they were like, it's all connected, people.
And it didn't matter at all.
It did not at all.
I gave up on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I don't think it affected my enjoyment of the subsequent Marvel movies at all.
I think it was maybe like halfway through season two, they just stopped even connecting to the movies.
Yeah, it's just like, why I even bother?
Yeah.
So, yeah, look, let's say theoretically we get like a Quentin Tarantino film, which is still... on the board somehow.
Tarantino's still talking about other projects. Who knows?
Well, no, I've been pretty consistent about the fact that I don't actually think he's going to direct, but right. It's still a Quentin Tarantino story that's mm-hmm. been developed by another screenwriter. I think it's really about maybe tapping. I hope they tap a strong director, because I think it's going to be kind of lame if you get like a journeyman director for a Tarantino idea, you know,
yeah.
like, you know, go look at maybe Tony Scott right. doing like True Romance, right? He's a great director. He's got like a wild idea like Tarantino did. Get us like whoever the equivalent of Tony Scott is nowadays, you know?
Or like the Oliver Stone doing Natural Born Killers.
Well, that's...
let's really go crazy with
yeah,
this.
Yeah. So like, I think you just need to like do something like daring. And I yeah. hope they realize that if they have two films in development, mm-hmm. which I think is smart of them, let's say much like what seemed to happen with the S.J. Clarkson movie, that things fall through. At least you've got something else in the pipeline there.
Yeah.
Much like they have with the Noah Hawley movie that's being developed by Noah Hawley, who's doing some really great stuff with both the Fargo TV series as well as Legion, which was yeah. the X-Men series as well.
I would love to read his treatment or what his concept was for the Doctor Doom project. That obviously was a victim of the Disney buying Fox. I just would have loved to hear what it is, because I think it would have been interesting. And that's a character that's been, boy, has that character been mistreated by those Fox movies.
Yes.
And I think you could do something really cool. And it seemed like he really knew that.
Well, we haven't really gotten into Noah Hawley. I'll tell you this, as a storyteller
mm-hmm.
and as a, you know, a director, he is not visually boring. What he's doing is he's telling stories through visuals as well. And I think that's very important, where like mm-hmm. some people will just do like focus on stories. You'll do the master shot, close up, master shot, which is kind of, it's fine directing, but whatever. Like Noah Hawley, I expect something like very visually stunning. It also makes me worried that Paramount will get a little bit nervous.
Right.
And I don't know, ease him out somehow, but now is not the time for Paramount to be getting nervous about their projects. Now is a time to really try to grip audiences, do something novel, and pull them in a way that they haven't been into it before. So I'm actually kind of more excited about the prospect of a Noah Hawley project than I am a Quentin Tarantino story idea written by the screenwriter of The Revenant and a director who's probably not going to be Tarantino directing that project. So.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a big fan of the Warner Brothers movies that have come out, the superhero movies, the DC movies, but I will say I really appreciate that they're getting visually stylish directors so that when you see at least their marketing, the movies look amazing. That's something I would like to see from Star Trek, preferably with better movies, but I want to see them push that bar in making great looking movies, because Star Trek doesn't have the benefit of what Marvel has, where you can put out a movie that kind of looks very generic, say like Captain Marvel, and it makes like $1 billion. They don't like have that sort of cachet over at Paramount
No.
to do that. And so I would like them to really put up movies that look amazing. You know, look at Mad Max Fury Road a couple years ago, 2015. You know, that movie did really well. And, you know, again, it was a very delayed fourth sequel to a franchise that was never a big financial cash cow. It looked so amazing. People were like, I want to watch this. They didn't know who George Miller was, really. And I would love to see
James that. Cromwell did.
That's true. And that'll do, pig. Yeah, I mean, that's what I would like to see from Star Trek. And I think that's something J.J. Abrams did as well with that first 2009 film. It looked astonishing. And it was like, when you walked out of that movie, even if you didn't like it, it looked visually bold and like something you remembered shots from.
Yes.
That's what I want to see from Star Trek, because they kind of have to. They cannot put out a movie, I don't think, right now that is very generic sci-fi looking.
What gives me hope, though, is that Star Trek Discovery, the boldest that we've seen really from Star Trek on TV. I'll say that. And I think a lot of the sequences that we've seen on Discovery, it really rivals a lot of the stuff that we've seen in the JJ universe too. So
yeah.
I think that at least CBS is like, okay, we recognize that the franchise needs to grow visually. Will the Paramount sister company be able to do that ongoing in this big Viacom conglomerate? The thing that does give me pause though, is that you could tell prior to this merger, CBS was investing a lot into Star Trek. I think they recognize a lot about building up the CBS All Access library, just what a cultural gem they had, which, let's be honest, if you look at the CBS catalog, it's pretty much the only thing that they got in there that would really resonate with audiences just on this 50-year-plus sort of scale.
Right. Are you saying Big Brother won't be equally adored in the future?
It may not be. It may not be. But it may still be going on for 50 years.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
But so the new head of this parent company was the one running Viacom.
Right.
I hope that, you know, that commitment to investing in Star Trek is still there. It only makes sense to me, though, because the things you don't have, all the mergers and acquisitions that we've been seeing the last few years, you think about like Fox and Disney, the whole reason why is because everybody's investing more and more into content.
Yeah.
So it's not to clamp down on content and reduce what's going on. That's why I think we're also hearing that there are two films concurrently in development. And after the S.J. Clarkson one fell through, it's been a few months, and now we've got yet another one in development. This really screams to me that they are committing that much more to content. And I think we touched on it a little while ago, but like just the potential for maybe feature length, you know, content to be dedicated to CBS All Access on the silver screen. It doesn't have to be going out into theaters, you know.
Sure, like the equivalent of like El Camino or something like that.
Which did go to theaters, though.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
that's true.
Maybe more like, say, HBO did Deadwood the movie this year. And again, that's like a feature length movie, but it was made for HBO, not for a theatrical release. So that's the kind of stuff that I think could be very exciting for Star Trek, because Star Trek always works best on the small screen. But if you have kind of like larger scale adventures, there's lots of two-parters that we've gone through over the years, Cam, for instance, where they're like, yes, it deserves this amount of time here.
Totally. And I am very curious how much of a elevated spotlight, you know, they get on them with Picard coming out, because, you know, Discovery is a show I've enjoyed a lot, and I am very excited for season 3 Discovery, but I feel like Picard is very next level in terms of the attention they're going to get with that launch.
Yeah, it's still unclear to me. Is CBS going to air it on broadcast TV for the series premiere?
I have yet to see, you know, like a Trek News headline or anything like that.
Yeah, we may have missed it, but at this point, I think they would have announced it already. I think they really want people to just go ahead and go to CBS All Access and sign up if you want to see a glimpse of Star Trek Picard.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess the other thing we should mention, the news that came out, is that Star Trek Picard showrunner Michael Chabon, he has got another project lined up over at CBS All Access. He also did him and his wife, they were executive producers on this great, very tough watch, though, but unbelievable on Netflix. It was a great kind of a limited series that they did. It gives me all that much more hope for the pedigree behind Star Trek Picard going forward. So he's going to continue on as executive producer of Star Trek Picard into season 2, but he's not going to be show running it. So it just makes me wonder, like, okay, A, let's say Star Trek Picard season 1 stinks. Well, maybe the showrunner's gone. Not a big deal.
Yeah.
But if it's fantastic, then it's going to make me a little bit bummed out. Like, oh, the showrunner's gone. So where do they go now?
I know. It's so... I mean, I am excited for Picard. I'm nervous about Picard, but I'm excited for Picard. This is not the kind of news I really like to hear, because, again, maybe it's a great thing. Maybe I watch season 1 of Picard, and it's like the equivalent of season 1 TNG, and I'm like, oh, boy, do they need their Michael Piller. But maybe it's great, and I'm like, oh, I'll have that sense of dread as we're getting to the end of season 1 of being like, what's going to happen going forward?
Yeah, I think you and I have are, I guess, somewhat relieved knowing that Chabon did Calypso. He wrote Calypso. Yeah. And I think we might rank that as our top, at least in our top 3 of the short treks so far.
I feel like his heart is in the right place.
Yes.
And that's all you can hope for when it comes to these types of, you know, shows or movies before they see release. You just hope that the showrunner knows what they're doing and can guide it well. I mean, I'm very curious what Picard brings, but it is a bummer just to have that sort of disruption in, I guess, the continuity of the behind-the-scenes team, especially with shows nowadays where you get these prestige shows that have, hopefully, you know, a single voice kind of guiding them throughout. It's not,
And that's the one thing that kind of continues to give me pause with Star Trek Discovery, though, is because, like, CBS has always been like, and Kurtzman has been like, no, we're making prestige TV. The thing was with modern day prestige TV, though, it's very auteur driven. It is some showrunner comes in with an idea, a pilot, it goes to series, and they're running it for, you know, 4, 5, 6 years. They're seeing it through to the end. There's been so much like turnover behind the scenes on Star Trek Discovery. So it's not really going to be like that kind of same vision that's going to see this through to the end. I think you and I, we've never been more excited about the direction of Star Trek Discovery going into season three.
Yeah.
And Michelle Paradise is now the official co-showrunner and along with Kurtzman. And we saw how with that last half of season two of Discovery, when she joined it, it seemed as if there's a steady hand leading this ship, so to speak. So
I'm very optimistic about her. I remember when she got the job to join Discovery, you know, you looked at her filmography and there was nothing that necessarily jumped out that made you like ultra confident in her taking over the show. But the evidence has been there for me just watching Discovery going, she gets it. And I really, really love what she's doing. So I'm very hopeful for season three.
Yeah. Well, Cam, Short Treks, I think we give both general thumbs up, but maybe Ephraim and Doc gives a higher thumbs up.
Yeah, like I give Ephraim and Dot like a, you know, two thumbs way up.
Yeah.
Versus the other one is kind of like the thumb up, thumb down. I'm like, it's enjoyable, but it feels, which is something I never like to say with the Short Treks, inessential. Kind of like Ask Not, where I don't dislike the you know, the Pike Short Trek, but you kind of go like, well, some good performance stuff, but it left me a little bit wanting for substance.
Where does even like something like The Brightest Star? When I watched that again in the rewatch of Star Trek Discovery Season 2 on Blu-ray, that was attached to watch right before the Sound of Thunder, the Saru-centric episode. That Short Trek is essential.
Yeah.
Like, it just explains so much about the character,
his
journey. It's
almost too essential.
Yeah. Well, but you know what? Like, you can still watch it and enjoy Sound of Thunder, even though I thought it was more of a middling episode. But they're doing a lot of cool things with the Short Treks. I want them to continue to experiment, go wacky, be bold, have fun. I think that's the key thing here. It's just try to have as much fun as you can with Star Trek. And you can tell the people doing these Short Treks, they all seem to be big fans of Star Trek.
Giacchino one in particular is just like... and we should say, actually, we didn't mention this. We actually got to see him in Star Trek at the Las Vegas Con.
Yeah.
Was it 2 years ago? Maybe 2018?
I think it was 2018.
Yeah. And I was really astonished to see him there because he's just such a busy guy, a very major Hollywood creative force right now. And he was really excited to be there. And he helped compose the Saturday Night Gala doing the orchestral scores to Star Trek. And I mean, this guy really seems down with Star Trek, and I watch his Short Trek, and I'm like, oh my god, like, he's just touching on, again, a Savage Curtain reference? Like, this guy is loving what he's doing, and that's the type of talent I want to see them bring more of, especially with these Short Treks, because it's just so much fun. And, you know, we didn't mention this earlier, but that first shot of the Enterprise was so beautiful.
Give us a deflector dish any day of the week.
That's right. Okay, so I think on that note, our assignment is complete. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, we want to hear from you. Jump on over to the Facebook page at facebook.com/subspacepod. Tyler, what are we doing next week?
Cam, I can't believe it. It's already our final episode of the year.
Of
the decade.
Yeah.
Wow. And we'll be in the 20s soon enough. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be our annual best of. And we actually just kind of... like, we love doing this one, though, because it's not just like a recap of everything that's gone on. It's us talking about the year as a whole, what it means for Star Trek, where we're going in the future. So there's going to be like extra bonuses, but also just like pretty much we select clips that generally just make us laugh. Mm-hmm. So if you're looking for a good laugh, this is a good kind of amalgamation of all of them.
And of course, the bloopers.
Yes, the bloopers, Cam.
Okay, you can also find us on the Twitter. I'm at Cam V as in Vasquez from Aliens did a voice in Ephraim and Dot Smith.
You can find me at Reportin. That's Reporton. N as in Naked Time flashback animation style for the win.
Okay, so until next time, the arena is closed.
Transfer complete.